Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, well, I think that that is a really great transition into tonight. I think one of the things that Jacob hit on was that it was like he was in his own world almost, and not recognizing that there's like all of us in addition to, and so just that press to not get so tied inwards that we forget about like the family that he's given us and how that affects each and every one of us. So as far as just getting ready for our getting our hearts ready for tonight and just positioning ourselves to be able to engage. Obviously, you guys know that we don't have mom and dad here. Hopefully, you guys have seen all the fun pictures that they've been posting. yes, all the handstands. We get to have our lovely Megan, who just flew in from Hawaii and is constantly just ready to go. So, Megan, we appreciate you coming in ready to continue in everything that was released last week, and that is something that you are characterized by, that is never laid down or separated or compartmentalized, but that his heart goes with you everywhere and his intentions are carried in all manners. So we appreciate you coming back and just being willing to immediately jump into it. But as far as our hearts, I want us to think about something practically. I'm trying to figure out how to kind of explain it, but I think there's two things that I think that our family can kind of struggle with, and I feel like he wants us in the middle. And so I want to try to speak to the both and bring us in. So one of them is that when there's like a Torah portion release, a lot of times it can be easy to see either like way out there or like right here. and what I think he's hitting is that he's really just trying to teach us how to see like right in the middle. And so practically where I'm seeing that is, I mean, even just going back to bait, is carrying the heart of what he's dispensing in a Torah portion. And so while yes, we carry the vision, we know what's beyond, it's still blurry. Like it's not really in sight yet. We might have like an understanding or maybe like a landscape of what might be there, but it's not fully in picture. Likewise, if we're so in the weeds, if you were to try to look at it, it's like trying to see something right here. Like you still can't see it and it doesn't make sense and it's confusing and you just look crazy because you're just doing this, like trying to get it, right? Whereas where he wants us, I think, is about here, where we can see the heart, we can see his intentions, and we're carrying that. And so I want us to just be prepared to not look like so lofty that we're missing it, or we're almost like running ahead or missing something with where he has us right now, is being in the moment. So even just going back to Jay's positioning, is that he's teaching us how to be here and present and engaging what is here. I know that that's something that we have to constantly pound with our boys, is don't worry about what's coming next. What are you doing right now? Yeah. What was my instruction right now? What did I just tell you to do? And they're like, but I'm way over here. And you're like, bring it in. Yeah. Focus on the instruction I just gave you. And let's walk that out first. Mm-hmm. That is what will prepare you for what is coming. Yeah. So I want us to really just focus in on like the heart of what is being released, so that we're able to really engage that and continue to walk that out, because that is what prepares us to continue to keep moving towards that greater vision. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So with all of that, Megan, obviously, again, we just appreciate you carrying all that and just willing to jump right in.
All right. Well, hi, guys. We missed you guys last week very, very much. Hi! His little head over the couch. I feel like everything that's being spoken to tonight, I want to dive into a little bit more before we get into the portion, because there's such a shift in the culture for us to become a people who are characterized by carrying the heart and allowing for the heart to be what takes up occupancy in our spirit. And that is ultimately where transformation will come from. And so I think that part of why we have to continuously be reminded of the heart, and I want to break that down a little bit, but part of why we have to be reminded is because we haven't had the, I guess we haven't given the permission to Yahweh to father us, right? I mean, that was such a huge peeling back when the greatest lie was exposed, right? It was that his voice was deemed unnecessary, right? And it's through instruction or the process of refinement that the heart is made known. And the heart can make us uncomfortable because it's intimate. And sometimes we want to bypass intimacy, and we just want the outcome of what intimacy is meant to produce, but we don't actually want to get intimate, right? So it's like there's these different things in us, or different mindsets or filters or behaviors, whatever it is that we do that keeps us at enough distance to where we can say, I'm still obedient, but it's not out of a heart of submission to his voice. It's more in it's almost like self-defense. I can say that I'm obedient, but I can keep enough distance to where I don't fully have to, like what Jacob was saying, be exposed, right? I don't have to be fully exposed. And if I'm not fully exposed, then I also don't have to fully submit to anyone outside of myself,
yeah.
Right? So it's self-preservation, but there's also an aspect of it that, well, if I make something known, or if I allow something to be made known, then it has to be dealt with, mm-hmm. right? And that is scary, it's hard, it's intimidating, it can be shameful. There's more to it than just discomfort. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yes.
So when we talk about the heart of what's released, what I'm hearing Amber say is, if we take something like an instruction, which we're getting a lot of right now in Leviticus, if we take something like an instruction and we take it solely for face value, or we only focus on trying to like make it practical, first of all, it's not always going to be, you know, but it's always meant to be implemented. So there is a way always for the heart of something to be administrated, always. Or the heart would be completely ineffective and without purpose. If it was heart for the sake of heart, what would it produce? What would it do? But if you bypass the heart and you're just producing something, then it's in vain, and it ultimately can't produce anything anyway, mm-hmm. because it's empty.
Right.
So what we're having to figure out as we receive instructions is, how do we give the ultimate value, or place the ultimate value on his voice as a father, and then not bypass the entire process of raising? Mm-hmm. Because that's what happens when we move past where we are to the outcome of the thing. You bypass the process of being raised, which is enticing, because that's where correction comes, that's where accountability comes, that's where pressure comes,
yeah.
That's where hardship comes. That's where suffering can come. Trial can come. It's where you have to learn how to endure. It's where you have to learn how to persevere. It's where you have to develop strength because you don't just inherently have it, right? It's where you have to grow in discipline. And so it would be so much easier for us to just say, either this doesn't apply, or I'm going to choose how it does. Mm-hmm. Right? Versus saying, how do you say this applies? And then I'm not going to bypass the process of application so that I can get to the point where, what's the fruit of applying this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't actually want to apply it. I just want what application will produce.
That's good.
But you can't. You literally can't. Because when you try to bypass everything that's here, in the middle, like if this is his instruction and this is the outcome of being obedient to an instruction and following it all the way through, everything in between is where he's raising you. Everything in between is where his voice is fully activated.
Yeah.
Right? Hearing an instruction is an aspect of his voice, but he's not fathering you through that instruction. Right? Mom and dad, as parents over this household, or as leaders over this house, they don't throw something out there and leave it there, right? There's a process of, this is what it looks like. This is how we apply it. How are we doing? There's accountability. There's connection. It's an ongoing work, right? Versus, here's the instruction.
Yeah.
Right.
Because then it leaves you to your own interpretation. It leaves you to your own means of application, which all comes through our personal filters.
Yeah.
Which is part of what he's trying to get rid of in this in-between, right? Which is part of why we want to bypass it altogether, because I like my filters. I like my perspective. I like my mindset about it. I don't want to come under a different one. Because usually it opposes all of it. His ways have never been mine. Ever. Ever. Anything in me that is honoring of him came from him.
Yeah.
It's not of me, right? But that's all that in between. So there's just an emphasis on the significance of us doing the work and really being able to adhere to an instruction and then apply it. So when we have a portion like we do tonight where we're talking about skin disease, and it would be very easy to just say, we don't really see that anymore. It doesn't necessarily apply to us today. This is why people skip Leviticus. This is why we bypass, you know, the Old Testament, because it's just old. It's no longer relevant. And that is our filter, right? That is us wanting to get over here versus going through the process, which is what we're learning how to do.
Right.
It's so new. It's so new to put value to his word, to his instructions today, because we're having to rewire our brain that not only is it relevant, but you have to abide by it if you are going to become like him. Right? Which is a whole other level of just saying, yeah, I could see that it has some relevance. Right? That's different than saying, not only is it relevant, but I have to be led in what it looks like to apply this.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. So in order to do that, a couple of things I just want us to circle back around to. These are big picture. These aren't like small details, so none of this is going to be new. But it always helps me when I receive a new instruction or when there is something that's imparted that I haven't known before or I haven't had access to because of my filters or the way that I've operated in my life. I always go back and I ask Yahweh to remind me, how do I position myself to receive this? What's the significance? And I just ask questions. So some of those reminders for us tonight would be, one, that we did collectively give Yahweh permission to father.
Right. Yeah.
This is what fathering looks like.
Right.
Every day that you're in your portion, Every Friday that you come to receive a word, you are being fathered.
Yeah, that's good.
You're also being mothered, and you're being overseen by the elder brother. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but specifically, there was a time where we sat down together in mom and dad's living room, and the word was, can I please father you? It was a plea of his heart, and he said, if you're going to use my name, because it was the same time that he gave us our name, and he said, okay, you've been waiting, you've been wondering, what are we? Who are we? What do we call ourselves?
Yeah.
If we're not this and we're not this and you stripped us of everything, what are we?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you are followers of the way. Right. Hebrews, yes. You are followers of the way, which means there is a way and I have to make it known to you.
Yeah.
Right? So what happened in that moment when he gave us our identity is he positioned us to follow.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. Right? Okay. So sometimes I have to remind myself when I get into an old mindset of, whoa, it's like I get in my own way. And he's like, remember what you said? Remember the permission you gave me? Do I still have it?
Yeah.
Because we forget things quickly,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay, so I just want to remind us of that. All right. Something else to circle back around to as we get ready for this portion was... In response to that permission of being fathered, what we had to also acknowledge, okay, if I haven't had your voice in my life, and the voice that I was listening to was an imitation of yours, and I was being fathered, but not by you, remember that?
Yeah.
If I was being fathered, but it wasn't by you, then I have to acknowledge I don't know anything.
That's great.
Right? It wasn't a pick and choose. Well, I'm really knowledgeable in this, but okay, I'll give you this. Well, I'm pretty confident in my insight or in my expertise or in this over here, but I'll give you this. No, it was everything. It was, I need you on your face for the rest of your life. If you're a transitionary people and you're truly called to follow me, I need you to acknowledge that you don't know so that I can father you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
How hard is it when you have a child, for those of you who are parents, and you can't parent them in anything because they know everything? Right? That is such a hard, I mean, there are seasons of our lives where where our kids go through different stages, or there's pride being worked out. There's different things. There's different reasons for that. But that is when parenting is the absolute hardest.
Yeah, right.
When the response is, I already know.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I literally can't teach you anything.
Yeah.
Then I can't be a mother. He can't be a father because you already know.
Right.
So we're done. So you're fully grown. You're fully raised. You're fully equipped. You're fully capable. Raise your hand if you are fully raised, fully equipped, and fully capable. Put your hand down, Gabe. You are not. No. Right? Because that is a life process of submitting to being raised. So, anyways, just remind yourself that we acknowledged, I don't know, and we will do it again and again and again. And these can contradict themselves so easily, how quickly we will contradict ourselves, right? It's like, well, I give you permission to father me. Oh, but I already knew that.
Yeah.
Wait. Maybe I'm not fully giving permission, right? Or, yes, I give you permission to father me. And then he tells you something, and you're like, oh, that's not right.
Yeah.
Well, am I the dad or are you?
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty simple, right? So, okay. So we don't know. All right. Something else to circle back around to as we're getting into this portion is that details matter. Okay. Details matter because he is extremely intentional. If it's in the word, it's significant.
Yeah.
Right? And we've been instructed to approach the word intentionally. Just a couple of weeks ago, it was released over us to be very careful how you approach the word.
Right.
And part of what helps you approach the word properly or in a mature manner is by acknowledging you are the Father, I am not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Details matter. So nothing that you have to say is insignificant, right? When as a parent, you're giving your child a detailed instruction, you don't just like to talk, right? Like you're not just talking to talk or going through,
right?
Kids, when your parents are giving you an instruction and they say, listen very carefully to these details. They are very important. There's a reason.
Right.
There's a reason. So, It's the same in our relationship, right? All right. Okay. So, a couple of things as far as reminders for Leviticus. Those are big picture reminders as far as his instructions. Now that we're in Leviticus, I also wanted to circle back around to kind of continue to set a tone for why this chapter or why this book is so important. Remember that it follows Exodus. So the people, we, coming out of a system of slavery where we were set free from the bondage of that slavery, and that slavery opposed or renounced his culture and his ways entirely and said, you must come under my system.
Right, yeah.
Okay? So when we walk out of that system, are we fully prepared or equipped in his?
Mm-hmm.
No. All you've known is the system of slavery that you were brought up in, that you were under, that you maybe were born in. I don't know the depths or the length, the duration of time that you were in that system, but it's to some degree become a part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's ingrained in the way that you see, the way that you think, the way that you function.
Yeah.
So his instructions in Leviticus are to a people who are free to come under his system. So he has to reintroduce it.
Yeah.
He has to make his standards, his culture, his ways known to a people who were told, you cannot honor that. And in fact, this is what you have to come under.
Right.
Right? So he set them free to worship, ultimately, to worship him. But how? In what manner? So we have the tabernacle, we have instructions when it comes to honoring the tabernacle. How do we dwell with him? There's a protocol. How do we engage your presence? There's a protocol. You're free, salvation. That doesn't mean you're clean. That doesn't mean you can just come and go in my presence as you please. There are standards, there are applications, there are rules, there are laws, there are regulations. Right?
Right.
Okay, but when you come out of a system where you haven't known any of those and you've been bound to something else, what is freedom over here can actually still feel like some sort of bondage, because at the end of the day, you just want to be able to do what you want to do, right? Which is that thing that we have to keep combating over and over again, that salvation was enough. I am free to govern myself and to live my own life, and I can still plead his blood over that entire mindset.
Right, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that I am righteous, that I am holy, or that I'm even free at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's good.
Right.
Okay. All right. So what we're being given in these instructions or in these guidelines in Leviticus is a means to deal with separation itself so that we can be set apart.
Yeah.
Mom said something like that last week when she was referencing how it can feel confusing when we're talking about separation, that there's separation, but we're called to be set apart. It's all about what we're called to be separate from and unto.
Right. That's good.
Right? So we can be separated from that system and fully bound to Him, which makes us set apart. Because you're not going to look like this over here. So you're set apart from what's separate from Him, what He doesn't identify with, what He doesn't claim is His, what He doesn't say represents Him or defines Him, but be fully bound.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So that's what's in progress in our lives. We are walking that out right now. Right? Being separated from the remnant or the residue of this system, so that we can become set apart.
Right.
Okay. We need these guidelines if we're going to do that. It's the only thing that literally causes us to be set apart.
Yeah.
The only thing. Yeah. How much like this old system did we discover we really were?
Yeah.
When we thought we were set apart.
Yeah.
I am so set apart as a Christian.
Right.
I am not of this world. I am not. And it was like, oh no, you are fully set apart from me. You are not mine at all. What you believe, how you act, what you think, what you honor, what you celebrate, what you worship, what you do, none of it's mine. You're absolutely separated from me. Now, can you become set apart? Here's how. Okay. That's the significance. So we can't look at any portion, regardless of our personal filter or how it seems to us, we can't look at any instruction as irrelevant or less than any other. Okay. All right. So tonight we are moving from chapter 12 and part of 13 into the rest of 13. It is a shorter portion in duration. But I do feel like there are some things that Yahweh really wants us to take away from this, from this word, so that we can apply it and activate it in our lives. A couple things that'll be different is I've been following Mom and Dad when they teach and go through like line by line, but I'm going to follow Mom in how she led last week, which was not going through line by line and kind of bringing more of a like just bits and pieces and really being able to capture what we've been talking about, which is the heart.
Yeah.
Really getting to the heart of the portion and not getting into certain things like, why is that hair yellow?
Mm-hmm.
Or why, what's the difference between a black hair and this color hair, and why pure white, and why if there's this much white, we're not going to get into that. Okay. Okay. All right. So a little bit of a review from last week. We started diving into blood cycles and skin disease. We're going to continue with skin disease tonight, but it was so fun to listen on podcast to this teaching on blood cycles, because you could hear from the beginning of the night to the end of the night things shifting, like shame itself or people's responses, where you could hear discomfort, you could hear like Dwayne, it was so fun to hear at the beginning of the night all the way through to where it was like, okay, We can talk about this, you know, and just all of the different ways that Mom was able to hit on, why is this so important? Why is it important that we acknowledge the cycle of blood?
Yeah.
Why is it so important honestly, I really haven't read Leviticus in general, but I certainly had never read how Moshe was instructed to instruct others on a woman's blood cycle.
Yeah.
Never studied that one.
Yeah.
And And I thought one of the comments was so obvious to me after the fact. That happens all the time to me now, where I'm just like, wow, I've really just been dumb. Like, I just feel like things are so clear, and I don't know. Anyways, you feel like that? Yeah, where you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But where I'm not connecting, why aren't we talking about this in the church? Why don't we talk about this in the culture, even, where it's this shameful thing?
Yeah.
And you have a people who, the comment that was made was, Mom was like, it's not like he took this group of women and, like, you know, they met in, like, an alley. And that's not what she said, but I was picturing that, like a secret, like, girls meeting, you know, where it's like, okay, and you're going to want to do this in secret, and you're going to want to, like, make sure that nobody knows and nobody hears, and, you know, like, when it's that time, like, don't talk about it, because it's really embarrassing, and it's really, like, and I'm just telling you guys, because I want to spare your husbands, because, like, that's just super gross for them, and really hard, and, you know, it's just, it... I don't know why that was so obvious to me all of a sudden when Mom was teaching that. I was like, yeah! I feel empowered! Anyways, so we started talking about blood cycles and skin disease, and ultimately it's all about this big, big, big thing that Yahweh is unraveling in our lives, which is like the most extravagant gift that I could ever imagine and didn't know we needed. And it's blowing me away every single moment of every single day, which is life and death.
Yeah.
And that what's unraveling is the degree of emphasis or focus that we've had on birth. This has already been said, I'm just reiterating. On birth and death, which means that there's no concept of the life that we're meant to live, right? So this breaking off shame in the releasing of death and life is, it's awakening in us what we've dismissed before, where we're not living a life that's fully for him, but we're just entertaining, right? Life, as in salvation, and then waiting for death, right? So you can see how that's been added to over time in theology, even when it comes to something like a blood cycle that's discussed in scripture.
Right.
Or an instruction on how to care for a cycle. I mean, if that's dismissed, it's like you're starting to see all of these pieces where things just kind of get pushed aside, and then it builds and it builds and it builds up to this giant theology where it's all about just life or death.
Yeah.
Or I mean, about birth or death.
Yeah.
No life. Right? So then, of course, things become shameful.
Yeah.
Anyways. Okay, so I hope that the same inner work is happening in everyone, that there's a, I don't know, like a dusting off of the death that you've held on to, or maybe a better way to describe it is like a dusting off of the life that you've put on the shelf, you know, where if something is your theology and it has been for so long, we're not realizing the degree to which it's affected and controlled the way that we live.
Yeah, that's good.
And part of why I think it's been hard for us to really like come alive in general when it comes to hunger, when it comes to endurance, when it comes to perseverance and discipline and all of those things,
yeah,
is because we're still waking up to the reality that we have to live at all. So if all we've owned is our salvation and our upcoming death, right? No wonder we're complacent. No wonder, like, it's not just about,
yeah,
we talk about how we believe that we don't, we had believed that we weren't responsible for anything because he did it all.
Yeah.
Talk about death.
Yeah.
You have no purpose. You have no responsibility. There is nothing for you to accomplish or put your hands to, right? Because he did it all, and now you simply have to wait. So while you're waiting,
yeah,
here are some things that can entertain you.
Yeah. Yeah.
While you wait, why don't you indulge in food? While you wait, why don't you indulge in,
yeah,
I don't, like, all of these,
yeah,
idolatry? Why don't you indulge in this or in that or in all of these things of the world? Because there's, we've been stripped of our purpose.
Yeah, that's good.
So I hope that that's coming, like, that life is coming back to all of us. Because that's what's available while we receive his instructions, is it's like invitation after invitation after invitation into more life. He's saying, you have a purpose, this is what I need from you. You have a purpose, this is what I need from you. I actually need you to live. I actually need you not to die.
Right?
Yeah. That's so counter, I don't know. I just, it's
good.
Certainly not how I have felt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, okay. I have been finding so much empowerment and encouragement in that word from Yahweh as I've been speaking over myself. Like, you have permission to want to live. You have permission to not want to die.
That's good.
Like, it's okay.
That's really
you're
good.
Not fearful. You're purposeful and you're driven. And there are things that you know that you've known that he needs you to accomplish. It's okay to be hungry to live and to be like, oh no, I'm not okay with 20 more years. I'm not okay with 30 more years. I'm not okay with 40 more years and barely able to move or function.
Yeah.
I have got to live.
Yeah.
How empowering is that? And all of this is literally opening up to us as we dive into things like sickness, skin disease, a monthly cycle, because of the fullness that we haven't had access to when it comes to these cycles of birth, life, and death. Right? It's bringing full empowerment to that word over the house that mom and dad have carried for so long when it comes to, in order for there to be life, there must be death.
Yeah.
But we've only applied it out of the filter we've had, meaning like us, we've only applied it to the degree that we know how. So up to a certain point, it was, well, yeah, totally makes sense, right? Like he had to die so I could live.
Yeah. Right.
But not that there's this constant exchange. Well, first of all, what does it mean that I am fully living now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It only meant I get to live eternally.
Yeah.
That.
Right.
So again, so I'll wait.
When I die.
Yeah. I'll wait. And while I wait, this is how I'll entertain myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? In this purposeless life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No identity. Okay.
Good.
All right, so those were some aspects of last week, and really part of what we're talking about is what he considers holy, right? Everything, all of the instructions that we're being given, it's about holiness, which we now know it's not the same as being saved, right?
Right.
Okay. What's super powerful about this chapter, and starting in chapter 12, is it's talking about within the sanctuary, of course, like we're still receiving instructions when it comes to the tabernacle, but we're also receiving instructions in life, and life is done within the community. So that is something that I really want to touch on tonight, specifically, is community. Okay. And really how us coming alive again is going to impact those that we do life and community with. Okay? All right. Okay, so Moving into chapter 13, verses 29 through 59. I'm not going to read them, and I'm not going to go line by line. There are a couple big picture things that I want to speak to. What is so interesting, though, about the details is they obviously matter, and Yahweh goes into such detail when he gives these instructions on what to look for, what it means, and what to do about it, that he goes into depth, color, location, right? Like, I mean, it's pretty interesting the level of detail that they have to be trained in to examine or identify a thing.
Yeah.
What we can take from that is something that was released a couple weeks ago as well about examining ourselves. Right? So all of these skin diseases were deserving according to who? Yahweh. Right? Was the one giving the instructions.
Right.
So we're deserving every time according to Yahweh of examination. And there was a protocol based on what was found by that examination. All right. I'm just throwing those out there for later. Okay, so clearly those details matter, right?
Right.
All right. So a couple big things that we're gonna dive into for these verses 29 through 59 is gonna be the character of Yahweh and our ownership or responsibility. Okay, ownership and responsibility to him, and our ownership and responsibility to others on behalf of him. Okay? All right. So, one thing that we can denote from the character of Yahweh, which when we're reading these portions, ask Yahweh, I'm sure it's coming naturally to people, but while we're having to reconcile what we've known of him and what he's revealing of himself now, ask yourself before you get into a portion, reveal your character. Like, make your character known, because it's all over, but you have to be intentional in receiving it outside of the filters that you still are having to have ground out. Okay? All right, so that's part of what I want to do. All right, so one of the aspects of this portion that reveals his character is it's the priest's responsibility. This was touched on last week as well, but I'm going to just bring something specific to this section. It was the priest's responsibility to examine the plagues or the skin, right? Where does their authority come from?
Yahweh.
Okay. Who is providing all of this instruction? Yahweh to Moshe, right? Yahweh. Okay. I have heard in my personal life and in relationship with other believers in my life that God is so repulsed by sin that he doesn't want us around him when we are in a certain condition, okay? He can't even look at us. Now, again, if that is a mindset that we have or have had, that is part of what makes room for the lie or the belief that Yeshua rescued us.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
From a father who can't stand to be around you because of your condition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because he has a standard or a protocol for you to cleanse yourself so that you can dwell alongside him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very different. Right? Okay. I want to speak to that a little bit. So, again, he can't look at us, but then Jesus came. Right? And not only could Jesus look at you, but he was willing to touch you when you weren't clean. First of all, same person. Right? Right? Like, literally. But also, I wanna read something. Because the lie that I hear is Yahweh wasn't willing. Okay? But what this portion rebukes is that very lie, because again, where is their authority coming from?
Right.
To examine, to identify, and what? To just examine for the sake of examining and saying, you're unclean, mm-hmm. Go out of my sight, you're filthy, you're dirty. But there was a protocol in place so that they could be restored back to the community.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have come to a new level of understanding of why something has to be examined and identified in the first place.
Right?
Right? So that it can be addressed. He doesn't, like when Jacob's talking about how vulnerable he feels, okay, when exposure comes. All right, when something is exposed in your life, does Yahweh then just leave you in your exposure? Has anyone ever literally been left in their exposure?
Not by Yahweh's choice.
Okay. Yes. Is there always a means or an invitation that comes with your exposure on how to walk out what's being exposed?
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Raise your hand if your exposure has always come with some sort of a means or a strategy to walk out what's exposed.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I'm not saying that we all walked it out. I'm not saying, right? Like, I'm not saying that accusationally. I'm saying that it's
right.
Scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's scary, and all of the things we talked about before, where it's like, no, I just want to be over here. I don't want to do all this.
Yep.
So it's exposed, but now how do I get over here?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but the reality is that there's never exposure without a means to walk it out. We see that here.
Yeah.
And all of that comes from Yahweh.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I want us to, we are going to do the other aspects of the portion. Tonight, I haven't usually done that, but I feel like with the big picture that he's hitting on, these are super applicable. I mean, they always are, of course, but I just mean to be spoken out loud. So Luke 5, verses 12 through 14 is speaking to the willingness. Okay, when I say that the accusation is he's not willing. Okay. All right, Luke 5, 12 through 14. Now while Yeshua was in one of the towns, a man covered with zerah appeared, and when he saw Yeshua, he fell on his face and begged him, saying, Master, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Yeshua stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. Immediately, the zerah left him. Yeshua ordered him to tell no one, but commanded him, go and show yourself to the Kohen, then bring an offering for your cleansing, just as Moshe commanded, as a testimony to them. Okay, so a couple things. One, we have that continuity of scripture, like mom and dad have been bringing every time, mm-hmm. where we have Yahweh, who we see he's willing,
mm-hmm.
because he's raising up priests who can not only help you identify, are willing to examine, but will help you identify what it is that you are plagued by or what is ailing you. And then they give you a protocol based on whatever that is so that you can at some point come to a restored state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? Right. He's willing.
Right.
Then we have Yeshua, who here he's asked, if you're willing, and he says, I am willing. There's no difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is absolutely no difference. But we'll read one a certain way, and we'll read the Old Testament a different way. Right? Oh, he's banishing people. He's casting them out of his presence. He's, you know, without fully understanding his character, the why is there that separation? What came about that caused that separation? And is there a means to restore it? Absolutely. Okay. All right. When it comes to being willing, because there has been such heavy accusation on his character, we also have to work ourselves back when it comes to our personal process of reconciling with his character that he's revealing now to what we've known. We have to acknowledge what those accusations afford us. Okay, so the real question when we say, are you willing? Meaning, are you willing? The real question, ultimately, if we begin to fully understand his character, is, am I?
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Every single time, it will be about your willingness, not his.
That's good.
And when we place an accusation on him that says, you weren't willing, right? It is a means, like we were talking about earlier, to self-preserve or self-protect. It can come from hurt. It can come from so many different things. But you have to be willing to wrestle that through with truth.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
A mature son or daughter doesn't just throw out accusation.
Right.
I mean, at all, we don't throw out accusation, but I'm just thinking of like the process of wrestling something through so that you can obtain truth. Accusation just affords you everything. It's an excuse. Okay. This is where ownership and responsibility starts to come in. Okay? All right. So, like I said, this is where ownership starts to come in our responsibility. All right. Are we willing to self-examine and be examined? I have a super simple practical question that you can write down. When the instruction came, I think it was maybe 3 weeks ago. I'd have to go back through my notes as far as the actual date. Actually, I can do that for you. The point I'm trying to make is twofold. One is, what are we doing with the opportunities we're being given? Because there was a question that was asked of us just recently, and we were sent into an invitation to examine what, if anything, was in us from that old system that we keep talking about as we keep trying to move further and further away from it, but to examine yourself. And allow him to examine. There it is. Oh, that was just May 2nd. Have you given Yahweh that permission, or have you started that process yourself? It was, it had to do with the portion of the two sons. The sons that operated in both innovation and impairment. You guys remember that? And the question was, is your judgment impaired? It's time to examine. Okay? Are we owning those kinds of invitations or opportunities where we're saying, okay, I'm going to position myself to be examined? Okay? So are you willing to self-examine and be examined? Are we willing to acknowledge that we're infected and by what? That sounds like a harsh term, but if you live in the world and you are having to constantly combat some level of separation from him because you are in the world, and we're acknowledging as a people that we're coming out of a system that doesn't have anything to do with him, there's probably going to be some sort of infection or something that's taken up residence, right? That's manifesting itself in some way in your life.
Right.
To say that you are unaffected is, I mean, it's, yeah, I can't imagine. I can't imagine that. I mean, it's why he gave the instructions to his people. Right? Okay. The other question would be, to what degree? Those are things that we see in this portion. What are, like, acknowledge that you are infected and by what and to what degree? So are you willing? This is like in response to that mindset of, is he willing? No, am I willing? Am I willing to position myself like the people to self-examine, be examined, acknowledge that I'm infected, and by what and to what degree? Okay, now here comes some juicy stuff. Because only a priest, which was talked about in last week's portion as well, only a priest can pronounce you unclean. That's not specific to this portion. That is a word over your life. Because it also has to do with the literal defining of sin. Without his instructions, we have no grid, no concept for what sin is.
Right.
Right? So that's a huge mindset shift for us as we come under his instructions, is we don't get to pick and choose what is sinful and what is not.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. There is one determining factor, there is one word, and there is one true definition, and they are his.
That's good.
Again, a priest is giving these instructions, or a priest is the one who is saying you are clean or you are unclean, but who is that authority coming from? Where are those instructions coming from? They didn't make that up. It wasn't a church doctrine, right? On, well, we're okay with this, but we're not okay with this. And, you know, well, we call this tolerance, and we call this sin, and we call this that, and we call, right? It's,
yeah,
those instructions didn't come from the priests in themselves. They applied it.
Right.
But what he says is unclean is unclean.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, black and white, no innovation. Right? Going back to that portion, that is what we do. And only a priest can pronounce you clean. Right? So when we talk about the role that we've taken, that's part of what could be the thing that infects us. Meaning the authority that we give ourselves could be the thing that infects you.
That's good.
Right? A huge part of what Yahweh has spoken to in the permission to Father is, he's like, can you get off of my seat? I didn't say you were mature enough
That's good.
To rule and reign with me yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need you in a seat of shared governance with me at this point while you are still learning what is clean and what is unclean.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So you don't have a voice to give that has any sort of perspective on what sin is or isn't. What's clean and what's not. That authority or that seat we took over because we didn't want to be held accountable or responsible to the process of becoming clean.
Come on, that's good.
So we can ask ourselves that question. What authority, what seat have I taken? Have I fully given it over? And some ways to recognize that is, am I willing to self-examine? Am I willing to be examined by others? Am I willing to acknowledge that I'm infected? I'm using terms from the portion, but you get the point.
Right.
And by what and to what degree? Am I dealing with those things?
Right, yeah.
Because if a priest says, this is unclean, and I'm not doing the work to enter a state that he says is holy or righteous so that I can dwell with him, then I might not have fully given that seat over. Right?
Right.
Okay. Some other aspects of that under the priesthood. Do we believe we can cure ourselves? Or do we struggle to acknowledge that we need to be cured or cleansed at all? Or in what manner? That's an aspect of the innovation part, and I'm going to read the other part of the portion, which was 2 Kings. Okay, 2 Kings 5. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man in his master's sight and highly esteemed, because through him Adonai had given victory to Aram. Though the man was a mighty man of valor, he had Zerah. Aram had gone out in bands and had taken captive a young girl from the land of Israel. So she served Naaman's wife. Then she told her mistress, "If only my lord went before the prophet who is in Samaria, then he would cure him of his Zerah." So Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus spoke the girl who is from the land of Israel. The king of Aram said, 'Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel.' So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of clothes. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, 'When this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent my servant Naaman to you, so you may cure him of his Zerah.' Now when the king of Israel read the letter, he ripped his clothes and said, 'Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man is sending to me to cure a man of his Zerah? But please consider and see how he is seeking a pretext against me.' Now when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, he sent word to the king, saying, 'Why have you rent your clothes? Please let him come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel.' So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. So Elisha sent him a messenger, saying, 'Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be clean.' But Naaman was angered and walked away, saying, 'I thought he would surely come out to me, stand and call on the name of Adonai his God, and wave his hand over the spot and cure the Zerah. Aren't Amana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be clean?' So he turned and went away in a rage." I'm going to stop there. Has anyone ever done that? I was like, "Oh, I'm going to take a break." On my steady time and self-reflection. Okay. So I'm stopping there because that is a huge part of the heart in this portion, okay? So we can be willing to examine and be examined, willing to acknowledge. I mean, he did quite a bit of work already to get there, right? Like he readied things, he prepared, he traveled, but then what happened. So, let me find where. Okay. So, in what manner we're to be cured, who defines those means? Yahweh. Okay. But we constantly try to redefine them. Right? He went away in an absolute rage because what he thought Yahweh would do is that the prophet would come to him. Who's done that? He thought the prophet would come to him and would wave his hand and it would be done. Okay? This is about our ownership and our responsibility and a full submission to the reality that his instructions are finite and they are definite and they are not for us to, again, innovate, going back to that portion, but also that there is a responsibility that we carry when it comes to his intentions, that they have to be applied. That's part of why I am really carrying this emphasis on application, because we will even see a process three quarters of the way.
Yeah.
He's literally right there.
Yeah.
And all he has to do is go get in some water.
Yeah.
And he's like, are you serious? All of this that I did, all of this, you're right there, I'm right here, and now you want me to go take a bath? I mean, the reality of the nature of our, again, it's about our authority and it's about the seat.
Yeah.
There is a power struggle here.
Yeah.
There is a power struggle that is ridiculous because we literally have none. If we acknowledge his role in comparison to our own. Again, are we willing to be fathered and are we willing to follow? The instructions are clear, they're direct, and they're simple, but you have to apply them.
Yes.
And we can't take a portion of scripture and say, that doesn't apply. Right? Okay. The good news is, did anyone read that one with their Torah portion this week? If you haven't yet, go back and read it. He does come under that. here. Let me finish it, because it ends juicy as well. Okay. So he walks away, he turns, and he goes away in a rage, right? His servants approach him, and they speak to him and say, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? How much more then when he told you only to wash and be clean? Okay, who has someone in their lives or an entire community of people in their lives who says, come on? You guys, I know it's a hard instruction. I know you have to keep preparing. I know now there's one more thing, and you've got to get in the water, and you've got to do this, and there's a responsibility that you have, right? But would you not have done it? Like, will you do it? So he went down and dipped himself seven times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. Then his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. When he returned with his entire retinue to the man of God and came and stood before him, he said, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now, that is the fruit. Not that he was clean. Not that he was revived, his flesh was restored, but that he came out the other side of a process that required a lot of preparation and a lot of responsibility and a lot of effort and ownership on his side. And what he came out knowing and proclaiming, this is a powerful man who becomes humbled by the reality of the ultimate authority over all of creation. And he says, now I know. Now I know that there is no God. So there also needs to be a shift in the outcome or the desired outcome. That it would, if it would purely be for us to come out the other side knowing who he is. Now please accept a present from your servant. And it goes on. Something, the juicy thing I was saying that happens at the end. He is so grateful. There is an overflow out of his heart when he comes to know who the God of Israel really is. And he is like offering, I mean, he's powerful, he's wealthy, he's offering money, he's offering resources, he's offering silver, all kinds of things. And Elisha says no. But then, okay, right here. So Elisha releases him. He says, go in peace. And so Naaman starts to leave. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, so this is someone under Elisha's house. He saw this interaction. Okay, this is a crazy warning. He saw this interaction. And he comes running after Naaman. And Naaman gets down from the chariot to meet him and asks, is everything all right? It's all right, he replied. My master sent me, saying, behold, two young men of the sons of the prophets have just come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothes. Naaman said, please take two talents. He even urged him and packed two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of clothes and gave them to two of his servants. And they carried them ahead of him. Now when he arrived at the fortified hill, he took them from their hand and deposited them in the house and let the man go. So they departed. When he entered and stood before his master, so you guys get what happened. He followed him and says, Elisha changed his mind. He sent me after you, and we do want to receive something. Okay? Oh my gosh, this is so good about fruit, you guys. Like, meaning that's the perspective. I know there's a lot in this portion, but I'm seeing it as, like, for us learning how to not go through, bypass a process for the sake of the outcome, this is huge. Okay? So he wants the fruit. Elisha asks him, where have you been? So he replied, your servant has gone nowhere. Then Elisha said, didn't my heart go when the man got down from his chariot to meet you? Is it a time to accept money and accept clothes or olive groves and vineyards or sheep and oxen or male and female servants? That's fruit. Therefore, the Zerah of Naaman will cling to you and to your offspring forever. Then he went out from his presence with Zerah as white as snow. I know. Anyway. Oh my gosh. Anyways, talk about integrity.
Yeah.
Fruit. I mean, there's so much we can get into in that portion, but what I really wanted to emphasize was the connection between the way that we will struggle to position ourselves when Yahweh begins to examine, expose, and then he says, okay, this is the treatment. This is how I want you to walk this through, right? And then be restored or reconciled back. This is what I need from you. And we're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's too much. That's too hard. I can't do that. Can I just get to the place where I get,
yeah,
you know, the fruit or whatever, when ultimately even our perspective of what the fruit is has to shift, because it's all about, it's all about the relationship. It's all about knowing Him so that we can get to a place where we are confident and boastful in the Lord.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now, this is all we're talking, we've been talking about our ownership and our responsibility to Him. And now we're going to talk about our ownership or responsibility on behalf of others. Okay? All right. So we hear a lot in this portion about the community, the potential effects on the community, because there is separation here when there is an infliction of certain. We've got the depth, we've got the, you know, whether it's skin deep, whether it's like whatever that determines that isolation or that separation from the community. And what that shows us, whether it's literal or by the Spirit, that our sin isn't personal because it's hidden. Your sin isn't personal just because it's hidden. So there are hidden things that are made manifest, like on the skin, right? That's an aspect of this portion. And because there it is worthy or deeming of separation from the community, what that implies, or an aspect in the Spirit of what that implies, is that it does have an effect on those that you dwell and reside with. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, when there's something that we, whether it's shame or embarrassment, whatever it is, that we, or maybe we don't want to be accountable to something, because once you make something known or once you make something public and expose something, you know, great, now I'm going to have to walk through a process.
Yeah.
Right? Who's thought that? Like, well, now that it's out there, that means that I actually have to do something about it. So it's easier to keep it hidden.
Right.
But just because it's hidden doesn't mean that it's not manifesting in some way that affects those around you. So our disobedience, our rebellion, even our, for lack of a better word, and I'm going to speak to this more, our pace affects those who are called to walk with you.
Yeah.
This is what I mean by pace, okay? Because that is something that could be somewhat offensive, because I feel like it's a like a residue of the grace covers all kind of mentality, where it's like, well, if I'm disobedient now, you know, He'll show me grace, and the next go around, or the next time He brings it up, or the next season, He'll let me deal with it later.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That might not be like a conscious thought. You might not literally be thinking like, I'm not going to deal with it now because in His grace, He'll give me more time. That might not be conscious, but it's implied.
Mm-hmm.
It's implied when we sit on something that He extends an invitation to you now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for His divine times.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So when Yahweh speaks to something, when He brings a revelation, it is not for you to hear and chew on for the next 10 years until you apply it.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you can't process it,
that
there's a work that needs to be done while you fully apprehend it. But what it does mean is, okay, I'm going to use the example of kids again. if I were to ask one of my kids to do something and they're like, I'll do that next year. Is that the point?
No.
Okay, is there a reason I'm asking them to do it right then?
Yes.
Yes. They might not see it as urgent. They might not understand why I'm saying, I need you to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I'm the parent.
Right.
I know the reason why I'm asking now. I know the reason why it has to get done this weekend versus next weekend.
Right, sure.
Because I know our schedule, and next weekend this is happening, and we've got this event, and you're going to think you have time then, but you really don't. Like, those are the practical aspects of things. But by the Spirit,
yeah.
When Yahweh extends an invitation, and he says, in this season,
yeah.
This season is about this,
yeah.
Or this week, or this day, these are my intentions, and you're like, I'll get to those intentions later.
Yeah.
You've missed the opportunity for a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be able to do it later, but there are reasons why it's going to be different than it is now, and it absolutely affects everyone you are in community with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean by pace, right? Like, I mean, it's literally movement together. So big picture, I mean, speaking to our purpose as a whole, if what we are obtaining is this understanding that our purpose is to transition the bride from this system to this system, to his kingdom, because there are things that he wants accomplished on earth on behalf of that kingdom, and they can't happen until,
yeah.
What? Okay, so that's over here. This is like the invitation, like we were talking about, or the beginning, until all of this is done in between.
Right.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
Right? So, and we're not called to do that by ourselves. You literally can't.
Right.
So if someone's over here, like paddling one side, and someone else needs to paddle over here, is it going to be productive if it's like, well, I'm going to paddle at my own pace.
Right.
And this is the pace. Yahweh says, I need you to be here now. Or I need you to be here in 5 minutes. Okay, so that means then that the pace we have to go is this rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is like, oh, well, I don't want to paddle that hard, or I don't want to, whatever. There's a million reasons, right?
Yeah.
And so someone's like going like this. And someone's like got their paddle in the air, and someone's, you know what I mean? Like, and so where are we going?
Yeah.
Or can you get anywhere? Can you move anywhere? So it's not just about the personal implications of movement and your personal growth or your personal movement when he says it's time or I need you here now, but it's also the reality that it affects those around you, because as a community, we are called to move on his behalf together, and there is an end goal.
Yeah.
There is something that we have to move towards, and, you know, it's not, we've talked before about movement together, but when it comes to the effects, you know, on the community and just having a mindset that's on behalf of not just us personally, but others, this all has to do with what we were talking about with, like, are you willing?
Yeah.
You know? Are you willing to take responsibility and to own, be willing to self-examine, be willing to acknowledge to what degree that is that work that keeps you moving together?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I spoke a little bit to like our purpose, the purpose that we're gaining a new level of understanding in. And this, the reality of becoming righteous, which is what the examination, the exposure, and the strategy or the protocol in response to what's exposed is all on behalf of, mm-hmm. right? It's all about being clean, being unclean, becoming righteous so that we can accomplish what it is that he asks of us. And in order to do that, we have to be able to dwell. We have to be able to reside. That this is part of why we can't skip the process for the outcome. I know that that's been a big topic of conversation at Bates and has been a part of, like, the word in general as far as, like, that jumping ahead. But that is part of why we have to retrain our minds to be willing and hungry to endure the process, because if we skip the process for the outcome, then the literal, like, work of becoming righteous is what's bypassed. So we could say we're at the outcome, but it will be our outcome. Mm-hmm. It won't be his.
Yeah.
Right? Which, talk about devastation.
Yeah.
That's what he freed us from. That's what he brought exposure to, was you guys are absolutely unity, community, you got it. You absolutely, you created your own little structure, your own system, and so you reached an outcome, and I'm way over there. So if we don't want to replicate that, that means that we can't skip this process for an outcome, because we'll be replicating what we just were freed from.
Right.
It's the process that's being restored to us, which means then that the process really is a gift, because it's all about reconnecting and being intimate with him. If what we didn't have before was intimate access, and the access that we have to obtain is through a process of purification and righteousness and obedience. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's our heart's cry.
Yeah.
Right? We just didn't realize that that comes with responsibility. Mm-hmm. So we can get a little overwhelmed by that.
Yeah.
And want to skip to the end. Okay. This also emphasizes the need for community as well. This portion. I mean, I was trying to identify with the man who had to, I mean, who was in absolute grief and was mourning and was proclaiming his uncleanliness as my own, like, as my own condition, and then having to be, like, separated, just that expression of being separated from him for a time, but then being separated from the community as well. It's like that's the state that we lived in, but we didn't realize it. And so now that that's all being restored back to us, we have to do everything that we know how and everything that he instructs to ensure. My heart's cry in that portion was, I don't want to be one who not only experiences separation again from you, but then also, now that I understand what a life is like in community, to walk without diligence of self-examination and awareness, and walking a process through to where then I end up separating, having to separate myself from the community. Okay, I think that's pretty much it.
That's awesome. Thank you. I think it's really powerful to be able to have your voice on all of that, to bring his heart and to see. Like, something I was saying was, I had a I had a hard time. I was eating a couple times while I was reading this Torah portion, and I was like, I can't eat and read this at the same time. And so to have someone like Megan who can bring such a full encompassing heart of what he's expressing beyond the hairs is like, is such a gift. And so even just speaking to the aspect of the isolation, like I can't imagine trying to walk out this process without the community and the family that he's given us and trying to figure that out on my own and trying to like sort through the weeds of how easily it can, like, you can take one direction and get way lost, and how intentional he's been to keep us on a narrow road to keep the momentum going in what he has for us to walk out. So I think that it's just really powerful to continue to look at the questions that you're asking of, am I willing to look and be examined? Am I willing to really self-reflect to a degree where he can expose anything to any, like, to any degree, and that I would be willing to fully follow through on something? Like, I can't imagine with what you were referencing in 2 Kings of, like, getting to the door and then being like, well, that's not what I was expecting, and just stopping there, knowing that there's something that truly is going to get you to the other side, but stopping in a place of, well, that's not what my expectations were, so I'm not going to follow through with that, and having those filters. And so just, I mean, even just going back to the beginning when you're saying, like, I don't know, like, that filter of saying we do know is what will stop us from, like, continuing through the process to go wash in water. And so it's just something that I think we can really easily translate over into finances in any manner, because it's like, how many times has he given us instructions or a direction, or we're like, Yahweh, I need out of this lifestyle, or I need an answer to how to steward this. And he's like, okay, here's my instructions on how to do it. And it's like, I don't like that one. Or that's not what I taught, or that's not what I was told, or that's not how I was raised. And we can bypass his intentions and stop at the door and say, well, I'm not going through that one. And we just totally miss it. So I just felt like for tonight, was we're like getting ready for our tithes and offerings, that we're sewing into that perspective of being willing in our tithes and offerings to look at that, but then also to continue to follow through on the processes that he has us in, so that we can be good stewards of his heart, his intentions, his resources, in whatever capacity that would look like.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you, Megan, for just bringing I feel like if it wasn't clear up to this point, the emphasis on the process.
Oh my gosh, the lit such a truth. It was responsibility.
Yeah.
We're true that. Now it's process. We're like,
one more try first, and don't need to follow through.
Yeah. But man, how many of us can, like, absolutely identify with how much these portions are reading us?
Yeah.
Like, when you can take the when you can take the details of it while also seeing the heart conveyed in it, and it's like, it's almost like it, in my life I could pick apart, like, individual situations from recent things up until years past where it is like, it is clear as day how applicable this is and how accurately this is reading, even up to like today. Which is such a profound blessing that almost can be, I shouldn't say almost, that absolutely can be taken for granted. And it can become a common thing that we reference, that like, oh, we're being read by the portion. Not that I think anybody does that, but to even just safeguard that mindset in any steps forward we continue to take, that it's almost this like commonplace, or even almost like a comical thing of like, man, this thing's really reading me. but to recognize also that that is a huge opportunity to be able to grasp, mm-hmm. like it was said tonight, that he is willing,
mm-hmm.
and when he is willing and we are read by it, that there's a partnership component in that.
Yeah.
I want to read a quote real quick. It's more of a paraphrase. It's not an exact quote, but at the beginning, Megan was saying, she made the point to say, how do we fully embrace the heart of the Father while not bypassing the process of being raised?
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a, not that the revelation or the process of that is simple, but it really is simple,
mm-hmm.
in that we can at the same time grasp his heart while at the same time not bypassing what it takes to see his heart fulfilled and made manifest.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's almost like it's so simple that it just gets missed.
Mm-hmm.
But in the simplicity of it is the day-to-day grinding out and the day-to-day walking out all of these things. Those were excellent reminders, and I was really personally appreciative that you put out those reminders of,
mm-hmm.
In response to permission to being fathered, we have to acknowledge we don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
We gave Yahweh permission to father us. Details matter. All of those reminders are things from seasons past and from weeks past that we should be carrying and keeping at the forefront of our minds as we're going through this. I found it extremely equipping and powerful tonight, just even in the way that you said that it's time to dust off the life we placed on the shelf. That, for whatever reason, stirred up a lot of emotion in me.
Mm-hmm.
Because and I'm sure we can all identify in various ways, but it's so easy to think that in what he's calling us to, in our fleshly state, that, well, there's stuff I got to give up and I'm just going to lay stuff down. There's things I got to put off to the side.
Yeah.
Now, that wasn't exactly what you were speaking to. What you were speaking to was being able to get out of the mindset and the system, right, of just focusing on the beginning and focusing on the end and dismissing what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's even a level of equipping and a flame to be kept in the additional piece of that, which is that there is incredible, I really don't have like the word for it, but it's like incredible revelation, movement, acceleration in being able to fully grasp what was released tonight and grasp that in between process and those moment by moment things and what that will do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I want to just end by saying kind of two things. One is just a reminder of this analogy of being able to be at the same time focused on the heart and the big picture while not dismissing the process and the way to walk it out. And I feel like the continued press to get out of the system that we came from really is it's the example of being so focused on the end result that it really produces like a place of hopelessness. If you want to look at it that way, because anything that you do really is meaningless because you just already know the end.
Yeah.
So the opposite of that being you're so focused on the detail, and I could even say like getting it right, that you still miss the end,
mm-hmm.
and you still miss what the heart is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want us to like really dwell on, meditate on, grab hold of, and really like with a tight grasp the revelations that were brought tonight. And this could be me speaking to me, but I feel like it needs to be said. I want us to just also not walk away totally overwhelmed. Because the emphasis and the focus on the details can feel overwhelming. It can feel daunting. It can feel like it's too much. But there was such major equipping in tonight and a fullness brought to, again, going back to reminders that are crucial for us to be carrying and matching those and bringing them full circle back to where we're at now is such a powerful equipping and should absolutely, I hope, stir up a major level of hope and invigoration for us to leave in that mindset, empowered and eager and excited to continue in the details and in every process that is in this life that we've been afforded, mm-hmm. and in this life where we can walk out every intention that he has, so that we can see the fulfillment of what he has for it. So I just want to like end by hopefully bringing some like hope and excitement in that and not leave overwhelmed at the work, you could say. Because it really is a privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.